Well, greetings and welcome back to another episode of Control Alt Army, stories from cyberspace, where we talk with senior Army leaders about why cybersecurity and cyber operations are commander's business. I'm pleased to introduce our guest today, Lieutenant General Omar Jones. He's the IMCOM commanding general. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm excited for the conversation, General.
Michael, thank you as well. I appreciate both the invitation and the opportunity, and very much looking forward to the conversation. Thank you.
Terrific. You know, we're going to geek out a little bit on some cybersecurity things, but before we do that, would you mind telling the audience a little bit about what motivated you to join the Army?
So, short story, but funny story. I'm from Maryland. I was a track runner and actually went to the Naval Academy of all places for a track meet, and was inspired by the opportunity to both go to college and an opportunity to serve. Figured out pretty quickly that I did not want to be a part of the Navy, did not want to be on a ship for my career. And this is the pre-internet days, before cybersecurity. Did a little research in the guidance counselor's office and found out that the Army had a school like that, actually better than that, up in New York. So applied and went to West Point, knew nothing about the Army, did not have any real service in my family, and just found I loved it. I loved being a soldier. I loved everything about the Army profession, the Army culture. I graduated from West Point in 92 and just thoroughly enjoyed every assignment I've had since then.
Man, we should have had you on the college game day before the football game last weekend telling that story. That would have been a hit. But thanks for sharing that with the audience. And, you know, the career that you've had, especially going through it at senior levels, just looking at your bio, I mean, I know we're going to talk in a little bit about your time as then General Austin's XO in CENTCOM as a little teaser for the audience. But before we get to that, you know, it'd be great if you could talk a little bit in terms of your first few assignments and what the sense of technology looked like at the time as you were coming up through those first few assignments, maybe your first time in command. Where did it look like the computer-related technology, internet-connected technology was heading for the Army?
So but my first assignment after your basic officer training and then professional training at what is now Fort Moore, you know, I went to the 82nd Airborne at now Fort Liberty and served there as a lieutenant in 3rd Brigade of the 82nd. Wonderful experience. When I look back on that, I think I learned how to be a soldier there. I had wonderful mentors, wonderful non-commissioned officer soldiers that I had the opportunity to serve with and deploy with. Went from there to what is now Fort Cavazos, where I served as a captain in 1st Cavalry Division, in 1st Brigade there, served as a staff officer, and then commanded two companies, deployed Bosnia-Herzegovina there as well. I think I learned how the Army works at Fort Cavazos. So the balance between those two assignments coming out of my company grade experience, I thought gave me a great foundation that I continue to rely on today and leaders who are still mentors to me today from those first 10 years in the Army. But specifically for technology, it was truly rudimentary during the 90s in a lot of ways. You know, I still remember that as a senior lieutenant working on battalion staff, it was the first time I saw a computer with Windows operating system on it, and the first time it had a mouse, and someone had to talk me through how to use Windows and, you know, the office suite and those kind of things. But it was very much using technology administratively, but not a lot of thought about the network. I distinctly remember probably my last 6 months or so when I was at Fort Liberty. I remember we went on a battalion run. Battalion run we would do once a month. And my battalion commander came out and said, I just got an email from the deputy division commander complimenting us on something the battalion had done recently, et cetera. But that was like the one email that had come into the battalion during that time frame. So it was just a different perspective. Clearly that accelerated while I was at Fort Cavazos, and the Army continued to leverage information technology to a much, much greater extent, but still more about what technology can do, not about the risk and the vulnerability or the operational impact we would have from technology. And I'm going to jump one more assignment that I think may be helpful for this conversation, Michael. So I went to advanced civil schooling, served 2 years in the Pentagon, went to Command General Staff College, came out and went to one of the Army's first striker brigades. It was then Fort Lewis, now Lewis-McChord, First time really had exposure to digital technology in the tactical space, and absolutely embraced it. Then it was, you know, FBCV2 and our strikers. It was the ability to actually connect to unmanned aerial vehicles on the move in the strikers, and we had some phenomenal non-commissioned officers with us that every time I said, can we do this? Can we make the technology do that? They were there and trying to really push the limits of technology, both on the move, in our command posts, et cetera. And that, for me, was a light bulb moment where I saw digital technology as a force multiplier for really our entire formation across that brigade, and then how we tied into the larger formations that were there in Iraq. That deployment was 2004, 2005. But that really was a moment for me going, this is a multiplier force. Leveraging technology, we can be so much more effective as a force, where the first decade was really what technology can do for us administratively.
God, that's actually a really neat story of transition from the Army understanding this as an administrative aid to combat force multiplier. Could you talk a little bit about the training or lack of training, actually, that you had at the time as a commander to know how to actually embrace what you were seeing on that pivotal assignment? Had you gone through a particular set of professional military education experiences, or were you and your colleagues really looking at, hey, we got a couple challenges in front of us right now. What do we have that we can help solve it right off the top?
Most, it was a combination, Michael, really, of both on the job, which I found very exciting because it was the opportunity. I would ask this what if questions. You know, can we get the system to do this? Can we leverage it to help us in all the things we were doing? You know, particularly when I was a battalion operations officer, executive officer, and then later as a striker squadron commander. But not as much in the schoolhouse and professional military education outside the basics of what used to be, as I mentioned, FBCV2, MCS, maneuver control system, some of the other systems that we had, the basic training in local courses to use those systems, but the broader aspects of the application of technology and the operating in the cyber domain, really not in PME that I'd experienced up to that point.
Got it. I think today, you know, the situation that I've seen just being with the service for a year and a half has shown how PME is really trying to embrace not just cybersecurity and cyber operations, but other aspects of emerging technology as well. And obviously that's why we're recording these podcasts, is to provide that course content for the Army and for its education enterprise. Did you, by chance, were you exposed to any external education experiences in academia or other types of an industry engagement where there was any sort of formative lessons, or again, was it really on the job was the bulk of it?
Primarily on the job, but I think formative lessons is absolutely the right question there. So went to Iraq with the 1st Brigade 25th ID, which is the deployment I was just talking about, where the approach that we were taking was really, how can this technology exponentially expand our ability to conduct operations? Unit moved to Bielsek, Germany, became 2nd Cavalry Regiment, went back to Iraq in 2007-2008 with the regiment. And that was the first time where I started to see the risks and vulnerabilities associated with technology and associated with the network. When you go back and you look particularly in the early months of 2008, that was the same time frame where we had undersea cables in the Mediterranean that were cut, and we were without the network, minus satellite connectivity coming out of Iraq. And to see the impact on operations, to lose cable-based connectivity outside of, again, just available through the satellites, but then also to show the impact on our soldiers who had very little contact outside of the theater, because it also impacted their ability to communicate through morale, welfare, recreation system, those kind of things. And within those same months was when the Army had significant cyber threats as a result of flash drives. And so that was all happening while I was in Iraq. And so for me, again, back to light bulb moments, that was a light bulb moment for me, highlighting the risks and vulnerabilities associated with technology, associated with the cyber domain, that really caused me to, again, I have always embraced what technology can do to assist us as an enabler, but highlighted the other side. But we've got to be aware of that and the importance of cyber defense to protect our networks, protect our operations, protect our information, et cetera. But that was a formidable experience for me to run that deployment.
Well, that's a powerful story too, because you know what I hear as a kind of information assurance cybersecurity background is this transition from the service seeing the risks of availability, a lack of availability of the network, going back to the old CIA framework of cybersecurity, confidentiality, integrity, and availability. So if the first kind of reckoning was availability, what happens if you know the cables are cut and the network goes out? And then eventually also the growing awareness of the threat of confidentiality and integrity of the data that is transiting the network as well, and how I think the three-part triad of looking at risks in cyberspace still continues to be a pretty powerful way to group the threats and the risks to the service. We had talked also about, I think, another experience when you were on the commanding general's staff and sort of reflecting on CGSE. Is that something you might be able to shed some light on here on the recording as well?
Absolutely, Michael. And so if the path that I've kind of described of, you know, how technology helps us, you know, administratively when I was a young lieutenant and a captain, how technology can enable us tactically and operationally as a major into lieutenant colonel, and then, you know, that moment of seeing the vulnerabilities. The next waypoint for me was having the privilege of being then General Austin's executive officer in Central Command for 2 years, 2014 and 2016. And that's where I saw the both the potential but the risk of operating in the cyber domain at the strategic level. You know, as General Austin, as a Central Command staff, was working across the region, his interaction with your agency partners, his interaction with other COCOMs that were in support, the geographical commands, et cetera, really highlighted to me all of the potential, but also the risk in that cyber domain. Go a couple jobs later, when I was the Chief of Public Affairs for the Army, I really started to see that we were responsible for the Army websites, responsible for Army social media. So not as much the security, but seeing the impact of the Army operating in cyberspace and the interest. I was amazed at the number of people around the world that were interested in Army sites, interested in Army social media, and their comments. And as you would talk to our cyber teammates, the efforts to try to penetrate Army networks using that public affairs presence. And then I guess the last point I would highlight on this journey, because it does get back to your point about professional military education. As I left Army Public Affairs and before I commanded the Military District of Washington, I went to Capstone, a general officer course for brigadier generals and major generals, and significant discussion over that six-week course about cyber operations, cyber defense, the foreign threats that are out there, both from a network perspective as well as a technology perspective. But it was interesting for me to walk out of that course in retrospect with all of my joint teammates and realize how much focus collectively over those 6 weeks we had talked about cyber. And so as I look back over my professional military education, it was great to see that in Capstone, and really good to see that has permeated Army professional military education at echelon in the intervening decade.
Anything you would say to that next class of future Omar Joneses, future MCOM commanders, as they're sitting in the schoolhouse right now, you know, what would be your doesn't have to be tweet length, but you know, your kind of headline crisp point to them about their need to understand technology directly, and that it's these risks and opportunities in cyberspace are not really something to delegate to others on a staff, but what's their role going to be as a commander and as a leader in the service?
Well, I'll give you the bumper sticker and then I'll expand a little bit. And I think to your point, I think the bumper sticker, the tweet, whatever it happens to be, it is that leveraging technology and securing our networks is commander business. There is so much potential in terms of what we can do with technology. We're just hiring a chief technology officer, the first one ever here in MCOM, to help us best in breed what is happening out there across the Army, the Department of Defense, but also commercial industry, so we can continue to leverage cutting-edge technology to be more effective in all the things we do across the Army. But I routinely talk to the commanding general over at NETCOM, routinely talk to other leaders in the network space to make sure that as we are moving forward, we are both aware of the risk and we are mitigating that risk and vulnerability to the network as we move forward with our operations. But operational risk and the ability to be more effective because of technology, that is commander's business across the board. And that can't be, well, you're going to have staff that's going to help you out with that, et cetera, because of the potential, the great potential of technology, but also the associated risk that really needs to be in the realm of the commander.
That's a powerful message. I think you put it very eloquently. So thank you for that. You know, and then, you know, to come to your current assignment, can you tell us a little bit about the scope and scale of the challenges that you see before you today?
Well, first of all, I thoroughly enjoy serving NIMCOM. I've been here for 2.5 years now, and, you know, really 4 things we do for the Army. You know, soldier and family programs, all the Army infrastructure for the regular Army, base offices, all those things that take we keep major cities running across the board, and then we support the training and deployability of all the formations in the Army. That is 104 installations that we support. Every installation has a senior commander who has been designated by the Secretary. Our job, our garrisons support them. So 60,000 people, 9 countries plus the United States, both CONUS as well as Alaska, Hawaii, and then 9 foreign countries around the world for 104 installations. It is a fantastic place to be with a focus on supporting readiness, but also supporting quality of life for Army people, soldiers, civilians, families, soldiers for life, et cetera. But as you can imagine, with the 104 installations, you know, basically 104 garrisons that are out there, leverage the network significantly. And you can imagine that a lot of our interaction, particularly when it comes to morale, welfare, recreation programs, is the customer service interaction that we have there, point of sale systems and all of those things. So multiple points of entry into Army networks through NIMCOM that really reinforces, again, the value that technology brings for us to be able to do our job around the world, but increase risk because of that. And that really drives the conversation that I have with Major General Eubanks and NETCOM quite often, that we balance as I look at the mission we have to accomplish, and he looks at the network, and together as commanders, we make sure that we are understanding that risk and mitigating that risk going forward.
Yeah, I think that's, that understanding that scale is really powerful because in addition to the network that you're describing and the breadth of not just the people but the locations, there's also an operational technology story and a control system cybersecurity story that's increasingly becoming so powerful. You know, just in the news over the last week, we're in, you know, December 2023 for folks who are maybe listening in the future, you know, there are stories in the press about foreign threats to these kinds of control systems that may or may not always be connected to the network, but, you know, are on Army installations and are on parts of our critical infrastructure across the country that really requires a partnership, not just between the government and the Army and the private sector, but also partnership within the Army between NIMCOM and NETCOM and Army Cyber, trying to get, you know, the best people, the right people onto the hardest problems at the right time before there's an incident to get ahead of it. So thanks for walking through that scale.
Example. So in addition to those 104 installations, the Armed Forces Recreation Centers, those, you know, top-tier hotels in Hawaii, Seoul, Korea, over in Germany, and down in Orlando, Florida, that's part of the NIMCOM team as well. And I won't say which one, but even just in the month of December 2023, you know, we had a vulnerability at one of the Armed Forces Recreation Centers at a point-of-sale system. You know, because, you know, again, supporting soldiers, families, service members, our veterans, et cetera, but a vulnerability to point-of-sale system that increased the risk to the network. And at the general officer commander level, between me and General Eubanks, working through with our team, how to continue to do all the things that NIMCOM, in this case, that Armed Forces Recreation Center does for our service members and their families, but mitigate that risk to the network. And that was the conversation between two general officer commanders in terms of how we could execute the mission, but mitigate that risk as quickly as possible because of how it affected our networks across the board.
Oh, that's a great example of how it is exactly commander's business. Those are two commanders talking about, you know, real challenges that can really only be solved together by the commanders. And, you know, the staffs do really hard and important enabling work, but ultimately, you know, to get changes made to mitigate threats in a crisis, that's the way to do it. Let me just ask, if mindful of your time, one final question, and it's about, you know, talent scouting. What do you look for when you're building a team now or looking to recruit? Are you looking on someone's resume for a certain background or certain set of experiences in this field? How do you weigh all the traits of Army leadership with a fluency and awareness of technology?
I'll use the example we're going through right now. As I mentioned previously, we are actively in the process of hiring our first chief technology officer ever. And there's a number of things when I've looked for that. You know, one is, you know, making sure we get the right person, and I would define that as strong technological skills, strong experience in the career field, both within our federal government, the executive branch, but also interacting with commercial industry and showing a ability to be comfortable operating in that space. But in any position where I am the hiring authority and where anyone on this team is a hiring authority, I'm also looking at the right person for the team. So it's that balance of the right individual for that job at this time, but also the right fit for the team that's going to help the team move forward as well. I have always found that if you hire the right person while you're investing in building the team, you're going to be most effective going forward. And that's absolutely what we're doing right now, this week, as we look at who our new CTO is going to be with.
Got it. So good thing to keep in mind for the up-and-coming folks in the schoolhouse is, you know, be clear on your resume about your experience, both in the education, but also on the job, about what you're bringing to the table as a comparative advantage in this area. Don't bury the lead, I think, is what I took away from that statement.
Absolutely.
Terrific. Well, let me close us out then. And thank you so much for joining us today. We've had Lieutenant General Omar Jones. He's the IMCOM Commanding General. What a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you for sharing your stories of why cybersecurity and cyber operations matter to Army leaders and not just to the cybersecurity and technical community. For those listening, we hope you've enjoyed the conversation, have taken away some good news you can use. Our special thanks to our executive producer, Sergeant First Class L'Oreal McNeil, and our creative director, Jasmine Manigo, and of course our friends at AMVID here in the Pentagon. We look forward to having you join us for our next episode in a few weeks. Thanks so much.